Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here, where...
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. I'm your co-host, Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stasi Okalski.
And we're glad you're listening. We're going to be telling some funny stories this morning. That's our theme, funny stories. And we hope you laugh. You can let us know that at some point. Today is Monday, August.
Today is August 12th.
You're sure about that?
I'm positive. That's, it's August 12th.
Okay, now I remember yesterday. I had no memory of yesterday, and therefore I could not tell you what today was.
Well,
but now I know.
Those blackouts are getting worse.
they're more like purple outs, actually, yeah. but that's okay. And... You can take it from here.
Okay. August 12th. And you're listening to enlightenedradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. This is the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour. And we've already introduced ourselves by name, so...
Well, we didn't introduce Andy.
Well, that's right. Andy Offutt Irwin is kind and generous and a wonderful storyteller and a singer and a writer and a composer, musician, symphonic whistler, and very tall. And he gave us permission to use his original song, Tarry Here, to introduce the radio program.
So he was here virtually.
Yes.
For about 30 seconds.
Through the magic of electrons. Traveling
there you go.
All kind of distances through wires and through the air, all this stuff. Actually, it's just light rays.
Okay. So, since we're talking about Andy, I should use this opportunity and mention that he will be in Hagerstown on August 19th at Stories in the Round for the third year in a row, delivering a performance for... people who love stories, which of course includes our listening audience right now.
Right.
So I hope you guys come out to hear him. I have no idea what he's going to tell. We haven't talked about that, just that he will definitely be there, 7 p.m. On Monday the 19th, which is this coming.
It's a week from today.
Monday.
Yes.
Yeah, so how did we... Okay, never mind. And
if you're not having fun yet, you should turn off your TV. So,
Well, turn off your TV?
Sure.
Yeah, that might allow you to have more fun listening to the radio.
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
Watching those news broadcasts will just distract you from reality.
If you'd like more information about hearing Andy at Stories in the Round, you can call me, Fanny Crawford, at 301-730-1638, or you can email me at Fanitsky, F-A-N-I-T-S-K-Y, at hotmail.com. Because you may want to know about who else is coming up.
Yes.
After Andy in September, Jim May will be in Hagerstown doing his performance in October. Did I just say September? That's what I meant to say. September 23rd.
Right.
Jim May. And then in October, Dovey Thomason. In November, Mitch Capel. And in December, yours truly, Fanny Crawford, performing at Stories in the Round, 7 p.m. Sometimes the third, but usually the fourth Monday of the month. And that's why you need to call me if you want more information. $10 in advance or $12 at the door.
Since we're doing humorous stories today, I thought I'd ask you a question. Was there a comma after the words call me in that sentence. If more information, you can
as in call me 3017.
No, you said call me Fanny Crawford, and I think I call you Fanny Crawford all the time. And so I didn't hear a comma, and I was wondering if there was one.
There was a comma.
Okay.
Because the Fanny Crawford referred to the me.
That's
me,
right.
Me,
but I just thought that was funny. I just recently saw some of those where people like to pick on a person, you know, saying
about their commas,
their punctuation. And yes. You can read it as, you know, you can get all kind of meanings out of it, and some of them that are possibly offensive.
Colons and semicolons and all of those nasty.
Anyway.
You're going to tell us a story and we're going to laugh.
I hope so.
Okay.
Well, actually, I thought I would start, instead of a story, I would start with, because we're talking about humor, and one of the funniest people, humorous speakers I ever heard in my life, and I tried to emulate him when I was a young boy playing baseball, a man by the name of Yogi Berra. His first name was Lawrence, actually, I believe.
Laura. And what parts of Yogi did you try to emulate?
He was a catcher and an excellent hitter, batter, and he was pretty famous as a Yankee. Won more World Series championships as a player than any other man in the history of the sport of baseball. 10 individual World Series rings for Larry Yogi Berra. And he was famous for a number of things. One, he was a great catcher. And he, as a hitter, it didn't matter where the pitcher threw the ball. If he was determined to try to get a hit or not just let the ball go by, he would swing at things that were a foot and a half outside the strike zone. And he hit a number of famously recorded home runs by hitting a ball that no one else would have swung at. Once there was a ball that was right about level with his forehead, and outside the strike zone, and he just leaned across the plate and smashed it into left field stands for a home run. So he later became a manager of the Yankees.
That's how I know him.
And that was after his playing career, which was a great career. And he's in the Hall of Fame for
sure.
The Yankees and for baseball. But then he became famous for his yogi-isms.
Mm-hmm.
And so I brought a few of them today. things that he said in interviews. And if anyone out there is an older person, such as
ourselves,
they might know that Casey Stengel was a manager for the Yankees and won many World Series, a great manager. And Stengel was famous also for his Stengelese. He often had interesting sayings. I didn't bring any of his today, but I think it's fascinating that Yogi played for him and followed him and became a manager with the Yankees. And so I thought I'd bring a couple of things that Yogi said in interviews and not much in writing, but mostly in interviews about coaching and playing. When you come to a fork in the road, take it. We make too many wrong mistakes. You can observe a lot by watching. I love that one.
That's one of my favorites.
The future ain't what it used to be. Nobody goes there anymore. It's too crowded. Can't read my own writing here. You got to be very careful. If you don't know where you're going, because you might not get there. In theory, there is no difference between theory and practice. In practice, there is. A nickel ain't worth a dime anymore. how can you think and hit at the same time? That was one of his famous question that he asked when somebody asked him about how he hit the ball sometimes when it was nowhere near the strike zone. He said, I don't think about it. I just hit. You can't think and hit at the same time, which I think is true. If you have time to think, you're probably not going to hit the ball. Somebody's got to win. Somebody's got to lose. Just don't fight about it. Just try to get better. That was in a speech to his team. Even Napoleon had his Watergate. That's one of my favorites since he was around during the time.
Yeah.
It was impossible to get a conversation going. Everybody was talking too much. It ain't the heat, it's the humility. You don't have to swing hard to hit a home run. If you got the timing, it'll go. That was just good common sense, because that's really true. It ain't over till it's over.
That's maybe one of the most famous.
Yes. It's deja vu all over again.
That might be the most famous.
And I never said most of the things I said. That's one of my favorites from him. Because he was quoted for lots of things. And there were times when he would say, I don't think I said that. He was very honest about it also. He never pretended that he didn't say those things. And I heard an interview once with him where he said, the interviewer said, how do you think these things up? He said, I don't. Somebody says something, I just respond. And sometimes they come out and people think they're interesting. So I just think he was a riot,
He was. I remember laughing as a kid.
Yeah. And he was short, like me. He was not a big, tall guy. So when he first started playing, people thought he would not be able to play in the major leagues because he had certain... He was not wrongly shaped, but oddly shaped. He did not look like an athlete. If you first look at him, you think, whoa, why is this guy dressed up? But he was a great athlete. And there you go. There's
character.
My humor for the beginning of our...
Not unlike yourself.
Oh, well. Yeah. Unfortunately, I could never play baseball beyond my teen years. I just didn't have it. And that's a quote from my most favorite person ever, my father, who said, son, you should stick to soccer, put your energies there, because you just don't have it for baseball.
Oh, was that hard to hear from your beloved father?
It was terrible to hear, because I wanted to be like my dad, who was a great baseball player when he was young. But it was good advice. And
you had a great soccer career.
Right. And just thinking about it, that was on a walk from a ball game where I played. And by the time we got home, I'd gotten over it because he was right. And I knew it. I didn't have a strong arm.
And you had soccer.
And I had soccer. So
that's good.
Yeah.
Can you talk about the Speak Story series?
I can. And I'm excited about it because tomorrow, August 13th, at Reynolds Hall in Shepherdstown, West Virginia.
Were you about to move Shepherdstown to someplace else?
I almost moved it.
Bermuda.
I almost moved it two states north. But and Adam Booth, who is a Shepherdstown resident and considered a favored son, and who often is not in Shepherdstown because
but he's always
traveling the country, telling stories all over the place and wonderful tales. And he will be at Shepherdstown University,
Shepherd University.
Shepherd University. That would be fun to call it the University of Shepherd. No, Shepherd University. And he's going to be telling at Speak Story Series, which he started 7 years ago.
Yes.
And is now part of the Appalachian
studies program
in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. So we're expecting a big crowd. I hope it's going to be the best crowd of the year. We've been out trying
it
to
could be,
encourage
yeah.
people, and we even went to the...
Could be sold out.
Oh, that would be great.
I think the last time he told there, they were about sold out.
Yeah, well, and we sold some tickets the last two Sundays at the farmer's market.
All right, I didn't know they were doing that.
Yeah.
But tickets ahead.
We did, that was good. It was a little hard on the legs, but... standing
yours on. Not Adam's
no he wasn't even
I know
but we did get to talk to people. It was interesting. I did a little, what would you call that, human relations study and made comments on it. Carolyn Rodas would also approach people, and she's very good at it, you know, and yesterday I did too for a while, and I made note that when people turned her down, it was politely and with a smile. When they were going to turn me down when I began my spiel, it was with a look as if I had mustard on my nose, and it was disgusting, and they just kept walking by. And I think that's typical of in the sales business. When you're trying to approach somebody and you got to...
It helps to be female.
It helps to be... Well, it helps to be...
Or to have mustard on your nose.
Or be attractive, at least, you know. So, I was missing out.
Gosh.
Anyway, some people took the things. See, that's the smart people. Instead of saying something that, you know, they didn't want to say, no, I'm not interested, or...
Just take the piece of paper.
Take the paper and say, thank you, wow.
Use it for scrap paper.
Look at this, you know. Share it with my friends. I'll put this up on my refrigerator, you know, right next to the kids'
I'll
drawings.
Throw this right in the trash. Thank you very much.
But I do enjoy the grumps. I do. You know, people walk and storytelling. And that was a little girl. Just terrible. We're having fun today. This is humorous.
That's okay. What happens when you don't have a show for 2 weeks.
That's right.
All your humor gets stored up.
Right. So, and that's Tuesday.
The 13th.
August the 13th. $12 at the door. And...
Unless you have a season ticket.
Unless you have a season ticket. It's too late to buy season tickets now. But we're going to start selling them at the farmer's market probably in November for next year.
All right. So, I'll be sure to save my money so I have my money in November.
All right. In September, from Ireland, Claire Murphy. She's Irish-born storyteller, Claire Murphy. And she's going to be here September 17th, and she's going to be telling stories. And her program on that day will be called Universe. And it's spelled with the right letters, but it's written as capital U-N-I, capital V-E-R-S-E. So I'm really fascinated by what she means by universe.
Yeah.
I've made a lot of guesses. I think combining her, you know, putting everybody in the same place, I guess, or something. Then.
Or it could be putting all the stories in one place.
It could be. So I'm dying to ask her.
Okay. Or just listen.
October 8th, Tim Tingle. From Oklahoma. He's a Choctaw award-winning author and storyteller. His Choctaw Native American, in case somebody heard me say Choctaw and thought I was pronouncing something wrong. And he will be here. He brings his flute and drums, and he's going to tell stories.
I've never heard Tim Tingle. I think I'm a Facebook friend, or something like that. I haven't ever heard him tell.
I believe I heard him at Jonesboro a while back.
Okay.
In November, a real favorite, he was here last year, Bill Harley.
Yes, indeed.
And did a great job. And he always brings his guitar, and lots of times he tells a story in a song. And they're usually like a ballad in the days of old. So it doesn't just have one or two verses. It goes on and on sometimes. So, If you're interested and you want to get more information, you can go online and at speakstoryseries.com.
Thank you, Stash.
You're very welcome.
Okay.
And I have this week, it's exciting. On Wednesday, I will be doing storytelling at the library in Hancock. This is the 8th library that I've done.
Is this the last one?
And this is the last one.
Oh.
And it has been marvelous and fun. And I believe last week on the show, when I was here by myself, and because Fanny was...
All by your lonesome.
Oh, yeah. And I mentioned a couple of things about the storytelling. I've been having fun with especially... five young ladies at two different libraries. And
Have a following.
Oh, these in Keedysville.
I mean, I know you have a following, but I mean, in Keedysville, you have a following.
In Keedysville, there were two. There were a group came in, two mothers and some kids, young people. There was even a 9th grader and a 6th grader, and they were a great-looking couple because the 6th grader looked like a 11th grader, and the 9th grader looked like a 6th grader. Or they were really mismatched as far as height, And the 6th grader was a girl who looked very mature. The 9th grader was really trying, but he wasn't much above a 6th grade appearance, Anyway, I would not say their names because I wouldn't want to be picking
on anybody. Of course not.
But sitting in the front row were two little girls. And by little, I mean probably 4 years old. And whenever I have really young children audience, since I'm doing science programs and talking, I think, oh boy, I hope they think I'm funny, at least. Well, I asked them to introduce themselves, and they did. And Lucy, beautiful curly hair, and just stood up and said, "I'm Lucy." And the other young lady said her name, and I said, "Oh, Francesca." And she said, "No," with her hands on her hips, standing in front of her chair. She had to kind of hop off, and said, "Francesca." I said, "Oh, thanks for correcting me, because I like to know people's names and be able to say them correctly." And I said, "So what grade are you girls in?" And they both looked at me and as if I had mustard on my nose or something. And Lucy said, "We don't go to school yet. We're too young." I said, "Thanks." And during my entire hour program, they were two of the most active listeners and questioners.
And correctors.
And commenters. Yes. So anyway, that was a great deal of fun. And then the next library I did that week was, who knows? I keep forgetting the name of that library. Anyway, I had three sisters in the audience, 5, 9, and 12. And boy, were they sharp. Their mom was with them, and I told her afterwards, I'm guessing that they all get excellent grades in school. And she said, "Well, the little one's not in regular school yet." And I said, "Well, she should be at 5. She was really very sharp, very observant. And it was a lot of fun,
So tell me again, where and what time?
Hancock Library in Hancock, Maryland. And the time will be 1 o'clock.
On Saturday.
Wednesday.
Oh, Wednesday.
And it's unfortunate. I mean, I'm glad to be doing it. And this was my final program for the summer as far as libraries. The program is called A Constellation of Stories. A Universe of Stories, not a Constellation. Universal Stories, but I talk about constellations and lots of stuff. And so, and it's been fun.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to try to be there because I haven't seen any of your summer series.
No.
And I'm sad.
Have you ever seen any of my science?
Yes, I have at Sharpsburg.
Yeah.
Twice, I think.
Well.
I saw. Well, we can talk about that.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, yeah. You may see some old stuff.
That's fine. It's always fun.
So anyway, I think you should tell us a humorous story.
I think I should too. Once again, I'm in practice mode. So we'll see how this goes. And again, I would love your feedback on this story.
Okay.
That's become my constant mantra.
Okay.
Okay. It's been an interesting summer. And I recently read a research study that tells us, and I'm not making this up, this is mostly true story, that people that live with cats are, generally speaking, not as contented as people who live with dogs. I was going to say cat owners are not as contented as dog owners, but you know, that may or may not be the correct term for people who live with dogs, but you probably agree with me, Stash, that if you have a cat, the cat owns you.
Mm.
It's not easy to own a cat. Okay. But this was a recent research study from my own alma mater, University of Chicago, and their survey documented that 36% of dog owners describe themselves as very happy, while only 18% of cat owners describe themselves that way. And if you have a dog and a cat, the dog may help you stay happier, but not as happy as people who have only a dog. So apparently having a cat reduces your happiness, even if you have a dog. Now, in my humble opinion, this research is totally unnecessary because anybody with any observation skills as you were telling us earlier from Larry Yoga, Yogi Berra, you can see a lot by observing. Is that what how it goes? I just made it worse, didn't I?
if you're gonna quote the famous Yogi Berra, I should
get it right.
That's right. You can observe a lot by watching.
Okay. Backwards. Okay. Anyway, you can look at any household with a cat or a dog and accurately assess the dynamic there. The average dog lives to please. Your dog loves you. He or she wants you to be happy. And if you're unhappy, your dog will do everything possible to remedy that. But your cat, on the other hand, lives to be a cat. Frankly, your cat does not really care if you are happy. The important thing to your cat is that you have a working set of thumbs, a can opener, and a credit card. Now, my husband and I said this had been an unusual summer. My husband and I just said goodbye to our 20-year-old cat, Earl, not very long ago, just a matter of days. He died of old age and thyroid disease, but that decline was accompanied by chronic respiratory infection and bowel issues. I was genuinely grieving. I'm still grieving, really. He was part of our household for almost half of our adult lives. But Earl had been sick for a while. So the day after Earl's last day with us, really, as soon as he was gone, I started cleaning out any old materials that might possibly cause health problems for us or for any cats that we might host at some time in the future. And I spent a morning cleaning all the sheets and the blankets and the towels that he'd been in contact with and getting rid of his old litter box. And I was thinking about cleaning the floors and the rugs. But then I took a quick lunch break, just peanut butter on a matzo cracker. You know, a big matzo, unleavened bread of the Israelites and the star of every Passover celebration, 8-inch square matzo. In our house, year-round matzo, as opposed to Passover matzo, is a regular staple, an alternative to bread. But as I put the matzo on a breadboard to start the peanut butter slathering process, I dropped the matzo on the floor. And I was in cleaning mode. I was thinking about all the cat hairs and sneeze particles on the floor. Scientists that you are, Stash, you identify. That matzo needed to be sterilized. So I put it in the toaster oven on the lower rack and turned the temperature knob to 400. This shouldn't take long. And just about then, Jose, my husband Jose, came into the kitchen and we started talking about work plans for the afternoon when I heard this very odd sound, something like... And I turned toward the toaster oven. Behind the glass, I could see flames filling the compartment, oven compartment. So I grabbed the cord, I unplugged the oven and opened the oven door, grabbed pot holders, one in each hand, intending to pull out the rack. But once I had my hand on the rack, I couldn't figure out what I would do with the rack once I got it out. It was in flames. So I pushed it back in and closed the door and yelled. I didn't know what to do. And Jose picked up the oven, pressed it against his chest, and headed for the back door. This looked like insanity to me. I was sure the oven was going to explode in his face. But I ran to the back door and opened it up. I fumbled for a minute, but I did get the door open. And Jose set the oven down on the walkway outside our back door, and we both stood there. I was frightened and watched the flames slowly die down behind the glass. Now, I let the oven sit there for an hour. It was still hot when I finally opened the oven door and pulled out the rack and put the matzah in the compost. It took me another full hour to scrub down the inside of the oven and get rid of that awful smell. It was kind of, I thought of it as a fumigation of the house, because the whole house had this terrible burnt smell through it. And so it became a cleansing ritual to honor the dead, generally speaking. So from now on, whenever I want to clear the air, generally speaking, I will just burn a matzah in memory of Earl. But I have a friend who lives out in the woods in a little hippie cabin. She's very back to the land. She has a wood stove, and she cuts her wood every fall, so she has enough to get her through the winter. She's very safety conscious. You kind of have to be if you're going to heat with wood. She cleans her chimney every fall without fail, no excuses accepted. But she's a hippie. She can't afford a chimney sweep, and that's why she has a cat. A big orange tabby. He must weigh 19 or 20 pounds. And he's about 30 inches around. His diameter, I mean. Not his head. That's just about, I don't know, 18 inches. But his belly. He's a big boy. So she just tucks him under her arm, climbs up right up on the roof with him, and drops him right down the flue. Of course, she still has to brush him real well when he runs out the other end. Lots of dust to clean up, too. But she has kittens for that, with a little harness and a stick on the end. She buckles one into the harness, just one at a time, of course, and she holds onto the stick and just kind of fluffs them around the place. It's much better than a feather duster, because they're self-cleaning. You know, cats are very clean animals, generally speaking. But I wanted to tell you about Earl, because when he was young And really, until he got very old and deaf, he liked me to read to him. I was away most of the day working. This was before I retired. And when I came home, I'd give him his dinner. But then he expected me to read to him before I could make dinner for myself and Jose. And really, this was a regular routine. I'm a pretty good reader, actually. But what Earl liked me to read was cookbooks, especially Italian cookbooks. And his favorite bedtime story was from the famous restaurateur Mamma Leone, her swordfish Livornese. But Earl always wanted me to use my Italian voice, talking like I remember Nonna Angela sounding. Now, Nonna Angela wasn't exactly my Nonna. She was my Uncle Jerry's mother. Gennaro Lepera was married to my mother's sister, Anna Irene, and his mother, Nonna Angela, had a very thick Italian accent. Oil a large baking dish with olive oil. Rinse and pat dry. 1.5 pounds of swordfish steaks and lay them skin aside down in the dish. Cover the fish with a liter of fresh made thick Italian tomato sauce and add black olives, capers, garlic, lots of fresh ground pepper. Spread 1 cup of Parmigiano over the whole plate and cover the cheese with the spicy breadcrumbs. Bake all of that in medium oven till the fish just begin to flake. Then mangia right away with a good pane Italiano and a falagina vino. Oh, by the time I got to the vino, Earl would be snoring and I could make dinner. But the other thing that Earl was famous for was his ability to get his breakfast on time. We called him the great communicator because you could hear him caterwauling as he came down the hall from the kitchen into our bedroom every morning, first light. He didn't rely on verbal communication, though. He'd jump up on the bed, walk across my chest, and very, very gently, he'd poke one of my eyelids with a single extended claw. That worked very well for him every time. I'd get up. But really, Earl, except at mealtimes, was not my cat. He was supposed to be. We got him as a kitten because the cat we acquired before that was supposed to be my cat. Emma was her name. But she decided in the first week that she was actually Jose's cat. And she slept wrapped around his head every night. She'd groom his hair every night before she went to sleep, curled up against the top of his head. And after a couple months, after trying everything I could think of to win her over to my side of the bed, my point of view, my lap, I gave up. She could be sitting on my lap purring, and if Jose came into the room, she'd immediately jump down and follow him around. All he had to do was look at her and raise a finger, and she would follow him. I've known dogs who were less devoted than Emma was to that man. That's why we added Earl to the household. I thought Earl was going to be my replacement kitten. That never worked out. My husband is just a pet magnet. Even fish love him. But the first cat we lived with together when we were first married was the kitten of my adolescence. I called her Cece, adopted from my 9th grade biology teacher when I was 13 years old. She was beautiful, sleek, half Siamese, a black beauty. But she turned into a Jezebel when she met Jose. Cece adopted Jose. I don't think she ever sat with me again after that unless I picked her up and put her on my lap. If Jose was standing up, she was doing figure eights around his ankles. If he was sitting down, she was in his lap. She lived to be 20. And just like Emma and Earl, she was Jose's cat for the rest of her life. So that study I mentioned earlier, that only 36% of people who live with cats are very happy, I understand that. Now that Earl and Emma and Cece are all gone, I actually visited the animal shelter the other day. After all I have left is Jose. And I'm wondering if I should trade him in for that handsome Jack Russell.
Trade Jose?
Because a cat's not going to make me happy.
Right. But you should have known that. You were magnetized in some way to Jose, so she should have realized
that. That was when I had a cat, though.
Right. Well, I admire you. I have
no I know you're not a cat person.
Oh, I love cats. I love animals. I love all animals. I just am far too selfish to own any.
Well,
they take up too much of your time.
They do. They take
you can't
up
go
a lot
on vacation unless you find a sitter or you put them into a kennel, which costs thousands of dollars a week.
And then the animals are not happy after they come home. That's and they right. let you know all about
That's
it.
That's right. You'll tear your face off if you get put them in a kennel more than once or a cat place. I know a family that sends their puts their dogs in a place called, and I believe this is true, Dog a Lot.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And when they travel and go away for a week on vacation or 10 days, the dogs are boarded and treated extremely well for a very good price. I just can't imagine spending money on having somebody babysit a dog or dog sit a dog. And I think I'm a real happy person.
Well, I don't know if I told you in that story that people without any pets are almost, not quite, but almost as happy as people with dogs.
Yeah. They don't have all those troubles, you know. I have had pets at times in my life through no fault of my own.
Circumstances beyond your control.
Right. And
having to do with children who are almost as much trouble as dogs and cats.
No, I prefer children. But here's the reason. This is the main reason, because I have taken care of animals, even horses, you know.
In the bathtub?
No. Horses are big. I even built a barn for the horses that I had in my care, because they had no place to go in the winter except the field. Anyway, but animals get sick and die. And they make you sad when they do that.
They do.
And I refuse to have something that's going to make me sad. And it's inevitable. Animals never outlive you unless you get run over by a car or get a disease that kills you. And so you wind up, you know, burying cats. And I did that a lot for my daughters. And I felt worse than anybody. And so I just don't attach myself to dogs or cats or elephants or
horses.
Or horses. But I like them. And I would never hurt one. I would take good care of them if I had had.
Oh, I think I found my next cat sitter.
Not a chance. That's another thing I won't do. I know people who have said, oh, I got stuck with our daughter's dog. And I said, what do you mean? Well, she was going on vacation and didn't have any place for the dog to go. Oh. I said, well, that's why they have locks on doors. When they come or when the phone, will you take care of our? No, I won't.
What a harsh guy.
I know. Isn't that terrible? I know, people say, of course I will take care of the dogs for you. Not me. Too selfish.
All right. I will not ask.
Good.
I'll just let them starve to death.
Then you'll feel bad. Okay.
You have another story.
I do, but don't you want to say something about stories in a row?
I already did. Well, I talked about Andy.
Yeah.
And then I gave the list.
You didn't really give dates, though, did you?
Well, because the dates that are on that little card are not correct.
I know. They don't even exist. At least one of them isn't even a Monday.
Really?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, then let's not talk about that anymore.
Okay. Yeah. So, are you going to print new ones, a new schedule?
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Well, I thought I would share a story from Hans Christian Andersen, and it's a short story.
Okay. Right. I'm ready.
Actually, any of his stories that I consider to be funny are longer because he builds things up.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a classic, The Princess on the Pea.
One of my very favorite right. stories.
And if you hear people talk about it, they very seldom say the correct title. People will tell you, oh, I love The Princess and the Pea.
But you're going to tell us the correct right. title.
Yes, and I'm going to take my cough drop out of my mouth. Once upon a time, there was a prince, and he wanted a princess, but she had to be a real princess. So he traveled all over the world to find one. But wherever he went, there was something wrong. There were plenty of princesses, but he wasn't quite sure if they were real princesses. There was always something that wasn't quite right. Then he went back home and was so sad because he dearly wanted to have a real princess. One evening there was a terrible storm. Lightning flashed, thunder roared, the rain poured down. It was simply dreadful. Then there was a knock at the town gate, and the old king went to open it. There was a princess standing outside. But good Lord, how she looked because of the rain and terrible weather. Water was streaming from her hair and her clothes, running into the toes of her shoes and out of the heels. Then she said that she was a real princess. Well, we'll see about that, thought the old queen. But she didn't say a word. She went into the bedroom, took off all the bedclothes, and placed a pea at the bottom of the bed. Then she took 20 mattresses and put them on top of the pea, and another 20 eiderdown quilts on top of the mattresses. That's where the princess was to sleep that night. The next morning, they asked her how she had slept. Oh, dreadfully, said the princess. I hardly closed my eyes all night. Lord knows what there was in my bed. I was lying on something hard, and I'm black and blue all over. It's simply dreadful. Then they could see that she was a real princess, since she had felt the pea through those 20 mattresses and those 20 eiderdown quilts. No one else could have such tender skin except for a real princess. And so the prince took her as his wife because now he knew that he had a real princess. And the pea was placed in the royal curiosity cabinet, where it can still be seen today, as long as no one has taken it. Now you see, that's a real story. And there, of course, I have my book of Hans Christian Andersen tales, and there is a beautiful picture of a cutout, which he did hundreds of them while telling the story.
I didn't know that.
Oh, my goodness. Then you need to get a friend of mine to come to Stories in the Round. He hasn't been around the East Coast for a while, but I met him at the Three Rivers Storytelling Festival in 2013. And now I'm going to be blank on his name.
It'll come to you.
It will. Anyway, he portrays, he has a number of storytelling personas. One of them is with a dragon called Grork. And he is a ventriloquist. And Gork sits in the crook of his arm. He's a chubby little dragon. Actually, he's a chubby big dragon. And sometimes they play the guitar together. Yeah. And sometimes they just tell stories. And he has traveled the world. He's from Utah and now is based in California. And I am so embarrassed I can't think of his name. I should have thought of this earlier. But if I don't think of it during this program, I will say it next week. Anyway, he portrays Hans Christian Andersen. He wears a beautiful suit, the top hat. And when he tells an Andersen tale, he will begin. He'll have a paper in his hand, and he'll take out his rather large scissors. And as he's telling the tale, he will fold the paper. He will make snips here and there and this and that. When he finishes, he will put the scissors in his coat pocket, unfold the paper, and hold it up. And there will be a picture of the tale. And they are just marvelous. When he appeared in at the Three Rivers Storytelling Festival, which is no longer in Pittsburgh, he made a cutout during his stories, and he made a number of cutouts for the producer of the storytelling festival there and gave it to her as a present, which was very lovely. And I know she has it framed and in her home. So, anyway, Andersen did that continuously during his career. He often spoke to children and wrote many, many, many tales. Some of them funny, some of them sad, and all of them with some kind of a moral. And I think for most of his tales, he did cutouts. And some of them are truly elaborate. Those of you on the radio cannot see them, but there are numbers of these things that are really elaborate cutouts. And to watch somebody tell a story and be cutting these things out, because it's not like he's laying it flat and has lines to look at. He just does it. And it's really a wonderful skill.
That's kind of like Megan Hicks doing her origami when she tells.
Right.
Yeah. Beautiful.
They're just wonderful. If you look at
each one's
detail,
different, very different from
different. Two people sitting on steps with bells above them, and it's just amazing. And he has developed this over the years, to where he has appeared at festivals that are being held in honor of Hans Christian Andersen. And he is I know there are a couple of men in this country who portray Andersen, but when he steps on stage, you're seeing Hans Christian Andersen. He has a delightful voice and a very calm manner when he tells the stories. And it's just wonderful to see.
Well, I do love the story of the princess on the pea. I have always loved that story. I remember it being a pretty small child, and it was just charming to me at that age. But what's really interesting to me now as an adult is that I don't remember ever thinking of myself as a prince. I know being a princess is a big thing for little girls these days, and I don't ever remember going through that phase. But it's fascinating to me that being a princess has been such a big deal for such a long time, and that it even then it had the same connotation that it has now. So not just being special, but being so special that you're not, I can't think of the word, that you you are you could be bruised by a pea. That's just under 14 mattresses.
Special properties.
And, yeah. And that when somebody says she's a princess, we all understand what that means. It has negative and positive connotations.
And now,
even the princess knows what those are.
And nowadays, it always boggles my mind that we still have princesses.
Real princesses.
And I have the most difficult time putting my head around the idea.
I know.
Royal families.
Well, not just princesses. We have, there are princesses everywhere in every culture. They may not be called that, but but we have queens in some cultures and kings.
Right, which is, I'm guessing that in 100 years there will be no such thing.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
They're going away. I don't think there is any place except maybe in the Far East where a ruler has the ultimate authority. Most of the kings and queens that are alive nowadays have no authority.
Well,
what's
interesting though is that there will always be, I believe anyway, it's hard for me to imagine a society that has no royalty of, even if it's just financiers, that there will, this inequality that's growing rather than disappearing around us, it makes me wonder about that.
No royal family in Poland.
Now,
and the last king was an elected king for over a century. For more than a century in Poland, kings were elected by the people.
I don't know any of that. We'll have to talk. We'll have to have a whole show about Polish royalty. You need to close out the show.
Right.
Somebody needs to close out the show.
Okay. Well, see, I have a picture of one of my princesses on my clipboard, someplace under here. Right there.
I see her.
That's the Princess Grace. So, this is Stasi Olkowski and
Fanny Crawford,
your co-hosts for the Noontime Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, independent community radio in Bolivar, West Virginia. Closing out this week's show. The Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional storytellers and those like us, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for...
We can't tell you, but...
Probably...
It's either jazz or country or old... radio.
There you go.
Mysteries or something. Detective.
And that's our show for this week, August 12th.
Bye.